On page 242 of the History of the World War, Little Hart tells us that an Allied offensive against the Sedan-Montauban line, to be mounted by 13 British divisions backed by 1,400 artillery pieces, had been planned for July 24, 1916, but had to be put off until the morning of the 29th. Torrential rains, notes Captain Little Hart, were the cause of that delay, a delay that entailed no great consequences, as it turns out. The statement which follows, dictated, reread, and signed by Dr. Yu Tsun, former professor of English in the Hochschule at Qingdao, throws unexpected light on the case. The two first pages of the statement are missing. And I hung up the receiver. Immediately afterward, I recognized the voice that had answered in German. It was that of Captain Richard Madden. Madden's presence in Victor Runeberg's flat meant the end of our efforts and, though this seemed to me quite secondary, or should have seemed, our lives as well. It meant that Runeberg had been arrested or murdered. Before the sun set on that day, I would face the same fate. Madden was implacable, or rather he was obliged to be implacable. An Irishman at the orders of the English, a man accused of a certain lack of zealousness, perhaps even treason, how could he fail to embrace and give thanks for this miraculous favor, the discovery, capture, perhaps death, of two agents of the German Empire? I went upstairs to my room. Absurdly, I locked the door, and then I threw myself on my back onto my narrow iron bed. Outside the window were the usual rooftops and the overcast 6 o'clock sun. I found it incredible that this day, lacking all omens and premonitions, should be the day of my implacable death. Despite my deceased father, despite my having been a child in a symmetrical garden in Haiphong, was I now about to die? Then I reflected that all things happen to oneself, and happen precisely, precisely now. Century follows century, yet events occur only in the present. Countless men in the air, on the land and sea, yet everything that truly happens, happens to me. The almost unbearable memory of Madden's horsey face demolished those mental ramblings. In the midst of my hatred and my terror, now I don't mind talking about terror, now that I have foiled Richard Madden, now that my neck hungers for the rope, it occurred to me that that brawling and undoubtedly happy warrior did not suspect that I possessed the secret, the name of the exact location of the new British artillery park on the Ancre. A bird furrowed the gray sky, and I blindly translated it into an aeroplane, and that aeroplane into many in the French sky, annihilating the artillery park with vertical bombs. If only my throat, before a bullet crushed it, could cry out that name so that it might be heard in Germany. But my human voice was so terribly inadequate. How was I to make it reach the leader's ear, the ear of that sick and hateful man who knew nothing of Runeberg and me, save that we were in Staffordshire, and who was vainly awaiting word from us in his arid office in Berlin, poring infinitely through the newspapers? I must flee, I said aloud. I sat up noiselessly, in needless but perfect silence, as though Madden were already just outside my door. Something, perhaps the mere show of proving that my resources were non-existent, made me go through my pockets. I found what I knew I would find, the American watch, the nickel-plated chain and quadrangular coin, the key ring with the compromising and useless keys to Runeberg's flat, the notebook, a letter I resolved to destroy at once, and never did, the false passport, 1 crown, 2 shillings, and a few odd pence, the red and blue pencil, the handkerchief, the revolver with its single bullet. Absurdly, I picked it up and hefted it to give myself courage. I vaguely reflected that a pistol shot can be heard at a considerable distance. In 10 minutes, my plan was ripe. The telephone book gave me the name of the only person able to communicate the information. He lived in a suburb of Fontaine.